Saturday, October 28th, 2017, meeting of the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission. Thank you all for coming. We have an agenda that'll take us through the morning, and we will kick it off with open public input. I think everybody that we have four people that want to do that. You all know the rules of the beeper and all that stuff, so don't have to go into that. I'll call you up two at a time, and for your 3 minutes, so Jeff Goldsmith and Reverend Martin, please. You kick the morning off, Jim.
Okay. The name is Jim Goldsmith, not Jeff, and I want to say that I'm hoping that all of you have a copy of the document that was online on standing committees, so it'd be easier for you to follow along with what I'm saying if you have that in front of you. So I imagine since that's on your agenda that you'll have a copy of it. Members of the commission, thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. My name is Jim Goldsmith. I live in Thurston County, and I am here today to give input on the committee structure and process topic, which is in today's agenda. I am representing Washingtonians for Wildlife Conservation, the Washington Waterfowl Association, and I have been authorized to speak on behalf of the Hunters Heritage Council. I have looked at the committee summary document that is provided on the department's website, and thank you for providing that information. I would like to get straight to the point and state that the hunting and conservation communities that I am representing would like to see committee meetings open to the public. This is option two listed on the summary document. These committees and the meetings that they hold are important and should continue with option two open meeting modifications. The table in the summary document is set up in pros and cons format. All of the pros are valid for option two. However, I'd like to submit a few questions and comments. In the options column of option two, I have a question, and not to necessarily be answered now, but just a question for you to ponder, is how are the four commissioners selected to ensure unbiased voting in the committee? And then I have a comment, depending on the topic of the meeting, representation from user groups primarily affected by the topic of discussion should be invited to participate and possibly have a vote. And then another comment, the public and other commissioners should absolutely be allowed in the audience. In the pros column, I have a comment. Adding full transparency with open public meetings will add greatly to public trust in the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the commission. In the cons column, I have a question, and that is, what sensitive issues would be hidden from the public? Sensitive issues should probably be more open to the public, since it is typically the public that will be affected. And I have another comment. The other cons listed reference staff time and cost, whereas the objective should just be to do things the right way. Options one and three are similar in that they support closed meetings, and since option one mentioned not needing to comply with the Open Public Meetings Act requirements, and you should reference RCW 42.30, it is worth looking closely at the legislative declaration and definitions in the RCW. Unless there is some section in the RCW that excludes the Department of Fish and Wildlife Commission committees from the legislative declaration and the definition of public agency committees, then it is likely that these committee meetings fall under the requirements of the Act. Specifically, since these committees act on behalf of the Commission by deliberating, discussing, considering, reviewing, and evaluating issues and alternatives, and then deciding if the full Commission should hear or consider them, the meeting should be open to the public. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Any questions? Thank you, sir. And Kent Martin, please, and Harvard.
Okay. My name is Irene Martin. I'm a writer and an Episcopal clergywoman, now retired. In 2016, Salmon for All, a Columbia River fishing industry-based association, made a FOIA request regarding the Fish Committee and the Columbia River Policy C-3620. I was asked to review that record and provide a report for Salmon for All, which informs my testimony today. My findings indicate that the commission operated for at least 6 years with a number of unofficial committees, including the Fish Committee. However, there is no information on the WDFW website regarding what committees the commission created, when they met, who was appointed to them, and by whom and when, nor who attended. No minutes, no rosters, or agendas appear. Committee meetings are occasionally mentioned in commission meeting agendas and minutes, with only general terms used, such as commissioners discuss recent activities of various commission committees. No regular inclusion of committee reports at commission meetings as an ongoing agenda item appears. The FOIA request produced limited records of Fish Committee meetings. Only three agendas and two emails on topics for discussion appear in the record, though the email trail mentioned approximately 11 meetings, conference calls, and dinner meetings. The lack of records, including meeting notices, minutes, agendas, attendance rosters, and reports and conclusion of the Fish Committee, is potentially a violation of the Open Public Meetings Act, Regulatory Fairness Act, and the Administrative Procedures Act. Attendance rosters are particularly important to show whether a quorum of the commission was present or not, whether guests attended in person or by phone, and or provided input. Our family fishing business was seriously damaged by policy C-3620 due to the behind-the-scenes Fish Committee activities and discussions to which we had no access. The Fish Committee produced documents that were acted on by the commission without public input, even when contradictory to staff scientific reports and the public options that were provided for comment prior to the meetings. It also appears that no presentation was made either to the Fish Committee or the Commission regarding the Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Plan and other fish recovery plans. These plans were developed with full public participation and input, including numerous public meetings. Both the Department and NIMS accepted them. But Policy 3620 was developed without any substantive information about salmon recovery actions contained in the recovery plan. The result is that we have gone backwards in terms of recovery, particularly on PHAS, which is higher now than when we started. Currently, WDFW has two conflicting policies and or plans in this case. The one that has been set in motion is failing Columbia salmonid recovery. This issue is properly the responsibility of the entire commission. From my perspective, for a Fish and Wildlife Commission and department that the public can believe in, reform is needed with the committee-type structure that you have and the way the meetings are conducted. Thank you.
Thank you. Right on the dot there.
I am good at that.
Because you're good at this.
Hey, I'm used to 10-minute sermons, so.
Well, thank you. Kent and Greg Mueller, please. So Ken, are you as equally trained from your...
I'm the ecclesiastical
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Kent Martin. I'm a commercial fisherman from Skamakaway, Washington. I see by your agenda that a new iteration of alternative gear for the salmonid fisheries is under discussion, to wit, the trap. We are not opposed to continuing efforts to address large hatchery and natural spawn surpluses. We are, after all, capitalists. I would point out that we adopted the tangle net at considerable expense with pumps, recovery boxes, short soak times, and extensive monitoring for both spring Chinook and fall coho. Our incidental mortality rates of non-target stocks are comparable to the sport fishery with much more scientific monitoring and peer review. We were promised additional fishing opportunity by becoming more selective. We have not been allowed tangle net access to spring Chinook or fall coho for nearly 2 years. Some of our fishermen adapted the same technology to current Columbia River conditions, and they have been subjected to continual harassment from sport fishermen and agency indifference. At no point has WDFW made a firm policy commitment relative to the connection between hatchery and natural overabundance and the need for a commercial harvest. The difficulty with selective gears is that the goalposts keep moving in response to an unsustainable policy of sport priority. Alternative gears were originally sold with the idea that there was a real need to increase the harvest of surplus stocks of Chinook and Coho while lessening incidental mortalities of non-target stocks. That goal has been eclipsed by a policy of sport priority on not just impacts, but all fish everywhere. No one has approached our people about the use of fish traps, perhaps because we'll want to know how much fish we can catch, when and where. After at least 12 years of alternative gear experiments, the WDFW has still not committed to providing enough fish to make these gears economically viable. Why would any fisherman invest in excess of $100,000 in yet another alternative in the absence of a formal declaration on the availability of the quantity and quality of the fish for harvest? In closing, I would note that the PHAS in our natural spawning areas is higher now than before the beginning of Policy 3620, largely because of this sport priority. I can find no conservation benefits to Policy 3620 as currently applied, save for the mandating of barbless hooks for the recreational fishery. So I'm not saying to hell with traps. All I'm saying, you people got to do your job and make sure that if somebody's going to dump $100,000 into a project, they're going to have the fish there to make it. Right now, our people feel like they've been subjected to repeated bait and switch. Thank you.
Thank you, Kent. And Greg?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission. I'm Greg Mueller, and I represent the Water Controllers Association as President and Executive Director. In writing some notes for this presentation, I was at a loss to know where to start, and I mean that literally. After all, it is impossible to talk intelligently about issues in this forum when the public is not privileged to its behind-the-scenes committee meetings where issues concerning our livelihoods are discussed and predetermined outcomes determined through a lack of transparency. That makes this process a charade and is not what the legislation that created this forum intended. I had no idea that this committee process existed until I talked with Irene Martin. Unlike the legislative roster, where legislators and their committee responsibilities are identified, the roster for the Fish and Wildlife Commission has no committee postings. Who exactly serves on these committees and when do they meet? Having been involved in this process from the very beginning, in fact, I was one of the people that brought the commercial fishermen together to support this forum. The Fish and Wildlife Commission has strayed from its original mission of managing fish and wildlife for the people of the state of Washington in a transparent forum. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. And John?
Question.
Oh, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm a little bit slow this morning, Mr. Chairman, so let me retrospectively also thank the folks who have testified before Mr. Herbert. Greg, I do have one question for you, and I'm not sure if you drove quite as far as everybody else to get here, but if you did, thank you for doing that. I wasn't sure, with regard to your comments on the committee options, which of those alternatives you favored.
Greg, speak.
I favor...
Microphone.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I favor being involved in the process. I didn't read the different ones, but we need to be involved in the process from start to finish, and not left out somewhere in between. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
I have a question for you also, and I think the testimony today is. Good. We're going to have a good, healthy discussion about committees. First off, I do believe nothing was ever hidden in committees. The work that goes on there is done, and then there's no decision ever made in committees. If anything, there'd be a report that came from a committee to the full commission to consider. But I'm starting to wonder is if there's even a need for committees. And I'm hearing from the public that you want to be a part of those committees. But if you want to be a part of it, 50 other people do too. And essentially, we'd at some point have a commission meeting going on because you'd have to allow for public input. And that was the reason committees were created. They could be more nimble. They could cover a lot of subjects. And they could report back to the larger group. But I would ask you now, If there were no committees, if everything was done right in front of this board, would that be satisfactory?
Yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks, Greg. And last one this morning, John Munsterman, please.
Good morning, everyone. Forgive my ignorance. This is my first time coming down to this commission meeting, so bear with me, please.
You get 3 minutes, then.
Thank you. I'm a nuisance wildlife control operator. I've been operating in the state here for the past 3 years. I come from Chicagoland area, where I've been doing it for 8 years there originally, so about 11 years worth of nuisance wildlife control work. One thing I'm seeing here with the different operator companies that I've worked with is there is actually a fairly low standard of education as a nuisance control operator, and that's something I'm hoping to raise the standard of in my time here in Washington State. In terms of, I'm part of a National Wildlife Control Operators Association that has very high standards of operating business practice and animal care, if as you will, and that's something I'm hoping to bring here to Washington as a whole. That's pretty much my bit.
Did you have any information you want to share with us? You can. You don't have to do it now, but if that to educate us about your organization and the standards you want to increase, you could send it to the Tammy, and then
okay,
she'll get
thank
it
you.
To us.
It's mainly more about proper business care, actually understanding the different laws in terms of, for an example, a difference between a gray squirrel and a Douglas squirrel. The biggest issue I'm seeing is actually differentiating between the two. I'm not sure how many of you are aware with the standards. The Douglas squirrel is a state-protected species. The eastern gray squirrel is not. And they denote it on the trapper's report list as a squirrel, ambiguous. There's no actual species listing, and that's something that I'm trying to push that level of merit. Oh, hello. Push that level of merit forward to actually admitting when an accidental take happens. This is actually incredibly common with a lot of different pest control companies that have no education of wildlife whatsoever.
I think you're raising an issue that we haven't had before us that I'm aware of, but it is important. So as you develop your protocols or your thoughts, please do share them with us.
No, absolutely, and that's part of why I'm coming down here. Make myself known that you will be seeing more of me.
Okay, good.
So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for taking the effort to making the effort to come. Okay, thank you all. Good input for a Saturday morning. Mm-hmm.